This is an ABC podcast.
We know the weather forecast for tomorrow is at catastrophic levels. And based on that, plus the conditions we've experienced in the last few days, I've accepted the advice of Commissioner Fitzsimmons and declared a state of emergency across New South Wales.
New South Wales braces for a day of catastrophic fire conditions across much of the state. And on Remembrance Day, celebrations in Greta to honour its veterans and the migrants that left war-torn Europe to settle there.
It's very important to remember the World War II veterans. There's only about 13,000 of those guys left nationally. But then on the backside, you've got the migrant story of 100,000 migrants who took a leap of faith to come halfway around the world to start a new life.
I'm Sinead Mangan, and this is Australia Wide. First, let's head to New South Wales, where the Rural Fire Service has warned of catastrophic conditions tomorrow for the Sydney, Illawarra and Hunter areas, which takes in Blue Mountains and the Central Coast. It's the highest possible level of bushfire danger. James Morris is a spokesperson for the service, and he joins me now. Now, right now, how many active fires are you dealing with?
Yeah, good evening, Sinead. We've got around 60 bush and grass fires burning across New South Wales at the moment. 27 of those are still yet to be contained. We have 10 fires which remain at the watch and act alert level, so there's no direct threat to homes at this stage. But obviously, we're still seeing fairly erratic conditions, so we're asking people in and around those fires that they should enact their bushfire survival plan and obviously know that if their plan is to leave, they need to do so now in case that fire does pick up and threaten homes.
This catastrophic rating covers big populations areas. How do you prepare for that?
Oh, look, obviously it's a huge exercise to prepare for this. We've got the areas of the Greater Hunter, the Greater Sydney region, as well as the Illawarra Shoalhaven in catastrophic. But we do have areas up and down the coast as well, predominantly in the north, which we are seeing extreme and severe fire danger ratings as well. So there's a significant logistical and operational operation going on at the moment. We've brought in crews from interstate, some 250 firefighters alone from Victoria, which come up and they'll man the areas in the southern and eastern parts of New South Wales, but we're also having a number of those out of every strike team staged across New South Wales as well in anticipation should something kick off.
In terms of people moving, you were saying that you're suggesting that people move now and not leave it too late. How many people in bush settings have moved to safer areas? Do you know?
Look, obviously that's a very hard one to tell. We don't know exactly how many people are willing to stay or that choose to leave. But as you mentioned, our message to people is if you don't want to be threatened by a bushfire at your home, in a bushfire-prone land, if your plan is to leave and not to stay and defend, now is the time to leave and go to a safer area, whether that be a more built-up area before those conditions deteriorate, and return once those conditions have eased. Now, obviously, people are saying, well, we're not going to go till a fire starts. But that's where we tend to see on days like tomorrow, these fires will move very fast, very quickly, and have a very good chance of threatening homes without notice. And if people's plan is to leave, obviously that there's a good chance that they're not going to be able to get out, especially for a lot of our coastal areas where it's one road in and one road out, surrounded by dense bushland. So it's very important that decision's made early so we don't see people trying to flee at the last minute and getting overrun by bushfires.
Where have you set up the big evacuation centres?
Oh, look, we've got a number of evacuation centres open up and down the coast and through the Greater Sydney and Blue Mountains region. We've got 9 of those located across those areas. So obviously plenty of areas that people can go to. They can jump onto the RFS website, rfs.nsw.gov.au. It's got all that information they'll need to know on current fires, on the fires that are burning across the state, as well as those areas with the evacuation centres.
You mentioned there that you're bringing in extra fire crews and that 250 firefighters have come for Victoria. How many fire crews will you have on board tomorrow?
Oh, we'll have thousands of firefighters and emergency management personnel, both currently committed to those 60 fires we've got burning across the state, as well as those about 30 which are burning up in the northeastern part of New South Wales. But we'll obviously also have those crews and emergency services on standby across designated areas that are in that heightened level of fire danger tomorrow, ready for something should it kick off.
What about water bombers? How are you placed for those?
Yeah, good. So we've got more than 60 aircraft readily and available to fight tomorrow. We also have a number that are on a on-call basis, which we can call at short notice tomorrow if need be. But these aircraft include three large air tankers, which are those big fixed-wing bombers that can carry up to 15,000 litres of firefighting liquids. We also have the air crane, or sky crane rather, Jerry, I believe this one is, which is here assisting and will be forward staged, much like our large air tankers across those increased fire danger areas.
I know often the US and Australia share those kind of resources. Are all Australian resources on Australian soil right now, because they also have been fighting some serious fires?
Yeah, look, they certainly have over there. Look, we here in New South Wales actually own a large air tanker, which is the 737 Marie Bashir, as we've named it. The other two large air tankers have been brought in from overseas in areas such as the US and Canada. Now, obviously, they've allowed that to come back early. They've had availability of those aircraft to release us for our fire season. So those extra two contracted aircraft will be here for much of the bushfire season, much like, as we mentioned, the air crane. So all resources that we have available are ready to go for tomorrow and will be used as soon as possible. But obviously, also, the aircraft are just a tool. If we get some of these significant winds that are expected to come through, there is a good chance that a number of aviation assets and resources will likely have to be stood down until those winds ease.
What about public places? I do believe some of the schools are closing down.
Yeah, we do. We have a number of schools that have been closed in bushfire-prone areas right across Sydney, the Greater Hunter and the Illawarra Shoalhaven due to those predicted conditions. And that's just due to safety. Unfortunately, we saw late last week with fires up on the north coast, a school was destroyed by fire, and we had closed that school earlier in the day due to the threat of fire. So it just goes to show that things like this can happen. It's important that we make these decisions early to prevent and protect life and property as much as possible.
James Morris, spokesperson for the New South Wales Rural Fire Service. Thanks for chatting to Australia Wide.
Thanks for your time, Sinead. Cheers.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide.
As we've heard, a catastrophic fire danger is forecast for Greater Sydney, the Greater Hunter, Illawarra and Shoalhaven regions tomorrow. And the New South Wales Premier has declared a 7-day state of emergency. But why are the weather conditions looking so bad? Caitlin Doyle is the ABC's national weather reporter and she joins me now. What's happening, Kate, with the weather? Why is it so bad and so horrendous for bushfires?
Well, obviously there's the underlying conditions. There's been a drought, there are climate drivers which are making things hot and dry, and there's underlying warming, of course. But the reason that today is going to be different to tomorrow, where we're expecting such bad conditions, is that tomorrow we're expecting a cold front to sweep through New South Wales. So cold fronts are often the big trigger for fires and bushfires in Australia. So we're talking Black Saturday 2009 was a cold front. Ash Wednesday 1983 was a cold front. Black Saturday 1939, all cold fronts. So cold fronts is the reason that we're expecting tomorrow in particular to be such a bad day.
Can you explain why that's the case? So why does a cold front end up creating these conditions?
Yeah, it's a bit confusing with the name and often people go, what? But yeah, basically what a cold front is, it's when you've got a high pressure system that's being replaced by a area of cold air. So you've got the high pressure system, which is dragging nice warm, dry air down from the interior. And then it's pushing those winds all the way down from the northwest down to the southeast. So you've got hot air moving really quickly down to the southeast. So we're talking about fires moving quickly in that direction. But then the cold front comes through and that actually brings a strong wind change. So you're getting your winds from the southwest instead. So it means if you've had a fire burning all the way down from the north to the south during the day, and then you get a sudden change of winds, it means the side flank of your fire, which is really long and skinny, all of a sudden the wind's pushing the right way for any fires that are still burning along the side of that fire that's been burning all the way down in one direction one day. That whole side of the fire gets pushed really rapidly and you get your fire expanding in an opposite direction to what it's been going all day in the matter of minutes. So it looks like, even if it looks like the fire has gone past you, it's really important on a cold front day to be aware of the situation. Also, it just generally brings volatile atmosphere and strong winds. And it's a similar situation with troughs, but it's not as clear cut. So yeah.
Okay, tell me where this cold front is coming from.
Yeah, so cold fronts regularly move across Australia. So this one will have come across from the west and it's now currently moving towards the east. It's fairly usual to have a cold front, but this one's very dry. This one's very dry, it's quite strong and it's quite far north, which are all quite unusual things.
Tell me, given those conditions, should we expect firestorms tomorrow?
Look, they're relatively unlikely tomorrow, but everyone I spoke to today wouldn't rule them out. Basically, the conditions are suggesting that the upper atmosphere is going to be pushing down and it's going to be relatively dry. So it's going to be suppressing the lift required for a pyrocumulonimbus cloud. That having been said, the pushing down could also encourage embers to be pushed further forward. So if we're talking about spot fires forming, the upper atmosphere could actually be encouraging spot fires to be pushed quite far in front of the fire tomorrow. And catastrophic fire days are often associated with quite bad spot fires. So days like Black Saturday, where there was a pyrocumulonimbus, there were spot fires tens of kilometres in front of the fire.
When is it expected that it will ease off a bit? I know tomorrow's considered to be a terrible day for fires, but will that ease off as the week goes on?
Yeah, so once the cold front gets through, it's bringing with it a cooler air mass that generally calms down the conditions. Those fast winds are less intense. But it's not looking like it's going to bring any rain with it. So if it's not bringing any rain with it, that means that those fires that are burning won't necessarily go out. So in a similar situation to the fires, a lot of the fires that were burning on Friday haven't necessarily gone out. It wouldn't be expecting there to be that big widespread rain to bring relief anytime soon. There's no significant rain on the 8-day forecast for New South Wales.
This is ABC Australia Wide.
Kate Doyle there. We head now to the town of Denman in the Upper Hunter of New South Wales, where firefighters are getting prepared for the catastrophic conditions tomorrow. The station has sent firefighters to help with fighting fires over the weekend, but tomorrow Denman itself is vulnerable. Gavin Bright is a firefighter there, and he told me he's in the midst of preparing for conditions tomorrow.
Well, down here at the station, we're making sure that all of our personal equipment is all good to go. Our trucks and engines are or in maintenance and all ready to run.
There was talk that people needed to move, that they should move now rather than leave it till tomorrow. In your area, are people actually doing that or are they staying put?
Well, mainly in the bush-prone areas, at a catastrophic area or a fire rating, we tell people do not stay and fight this one. This one's get out early. So any sort of warning you get off the RFS, leave now.
What about preparing your own house? Because you could be very busy tomorrow, Gavin. What have you done?
Yeah, so what I've done, so before I've come down the fire station to prepare my station and all my equipment, is I've removed all combustibles away from the house. Anything that can catch on fire that's close can work up to your eave and get into your roof cavity. So the fire works on not only ember attacks but also fire paths. So if you have a fire front coming through, little things like working up through a garden, through mulch and all the way to your house, say to garbage bins, hits the downpipe can go up into your eave. So just removing those kind of things away, like barbecue gas bottles and stuff like that. Also just making sure that your water's all good. Also, if you are lucky enough to have a generator, make sure that you maintain your generator and your generator's going, because in the event of a bushfire, highly likely your power's going to go out. So if you're relying on mains power to run the pump, yeah, think again that you should go get a generator.
How did you feel about the weekend and seeing what's been happening in and around Port Macquarie and those areas? Was it a surprise to you how quick it took hold?
Oh, yes, most definitely. But also not a surprise being the lack of rain that we have had and how dry it's been. It's devastating that you can't go out and help. Most firefighters have gone up to, you know, on the strike teams and do what they can. But we also need to make sure that we cover our own town as well.
Did you do much backburning in the cooler seasons this year?
This season, unfortunately, no. We had planned lots of backburning, but the weather conditions weren't favourable for it.
And what's the fuel load like around?
Around the town? It's patchy in some areas. We've identified the high-risk areas, so they're the areas that we'll definitely be monitoring. But, yes, it's unfortunately, just the weather and the way it's been in the last couple of years, it all sort of builds up and the cherries line up. Definitely dry conditions, high fuel load.
As an experienced firefighter, for people who are listening and thinking, well, what can I do now in the evening time? What would you suggest they get ready for tomorrow?
Prepare your homes. Prepare your plan. So talk to your family. Do you guys have a plan and step? So if you haven't done already, get onto the New South Wales Rural Fire Service have a look what's available online there to come up with a plan. Prepare your home. Like I said before, moving combustibles out of the area. As a firefighter, if I'm doing property protection, we're looking at the houses that we can save. So those houses, I wouldn't put firefighters in danger of going to a house that's unsavable. But the ones that are, we will try and save. There are certain bushfire rating conditions where we will say stay and fight if you can. But being catastrophic, no houses in the state are able to withstand these conditions. So any sort of flare-up or anything like that, know where you're going to go to an evacuation centre and get out early.
Gavin Bright, firefighter at the Denman Fire and Rescue. Thanks for talking to Australia Wide.
No worries at all. And just if I say one last thing, guys, get that RFS application on your phone through iTunes. Fires Near Me, it's called. It's very handy.
Thanks very much, Gavin Bright.
You're listening to Australia Wide.
It's a species that I have been fighting for.
Growing up in the bush is such a special thing.
So when the rain does come, we've got a few numbers.
What
got
if it never comes?
Put a feather in your cap.
ABC Radio.
And you're with me, Sinead Mangan. To the bushfire To the bushfire situation over the border in Queensland, where Carolyn and David Duff have been left devastated after fire raged through their 1,000-hectare cattle property at Taruka in the Upper Macleay Valley. They thought they were prepared and had done enough to protect themselves, but looking back, they realise they were never going to stop it. They feel lucky that they were able to save the main house and their lives, as they thought they were going to die. Carolyn Duff's advice ahead of tomorrow is to get out before it's too late. And she spoke to Kim Honan.
In hindsight, we thought we were prepared for it. We had tractors and spray rigs and water and generators. We had what we thought was enough to protect us. Looking back now and after going through it, we were never, ever going to stop it. It was igniting 12 kilometres in front of the fire. We were not on fire where we were living. Over the river, of the Macleay River, was spontaneously combusting in front of us 6, 7, 8 times. We had embers and we had fire racing at the house, and we were protecting the house as best we could. But the pump that was down on the river actually got burnt. The generator wasn't any good to us. So then I was bucketing water out of dog kennels off the veranda onto the grass, because around the house in the garden was combusting. We had trees in the garden combusting. My husband Dave was out with a spray rig trying to get it out, but it was running so fast along ground that would never have ever carried a fire. We then turned around and it had come up the bluff at the back of our house and ignited our big steel shed that had lots of machinery in it, and it was a fireball. We've had dogs that have not made it, have got burnt. I breed Labradors. I had 12 of them. I had just ran out and opened all their gates and ran to the house with them, locked them in the house, and then went back trying to put out the fire around the house. There was 40-foot flames coming over the big shed, coming at us, and I don't know how we survived it. Dave has said to me, he thought he was going to die. We were calling for each other, trying to stay in contact with each other. Look, we had survived it. If I can give anybody any advice, don't do what we did. We thought we were prepared. We know the country. We know fires. We are prepared, and we have never seen anything like this ever.
Carolyn Duff from Queensland's Upper Macleay Valley, and she was speaking to Kim Honan earlier.
You're listening to Australia Wide.
I don't want to put a killjoy on their fabulous family tradition, but
that was just mayhem and chaos.
The majority of them are still buying their trees, regardless of the snake.
So this is the first time we've opened the slide this summer.
On ABC Radio.
Let's head to Central Australia, where they're called today for an independent inquiry following the shooting death of a 19-year-old man by police in the Indigenous community of Yondamu. The Central Land Council is calling for an inquiry independent of the Northern Territory Police into the death of Kumanjai Walker. Chief Executive Officer Joey Martin-Jard said the family needs to learn the truth as soon as possible. And what he said was, we want full transparency, we want to see the body camera evidence, and we want it out in the open. I call on the coroner to have this inquiry at Yondamu and give families the chance to talk to him. Deputy Commissioner Michael White said an internal investigation had been opened and the death had been declared a death in custody. All deaths in custody in Australia trigger a coronial inquest.
You're listening to Australia Wide.
Emu fat for emu oil.
Not being able to play cricket properly would be a real shame.
She is a legend and I like to work with her all the time.
Particularly me, I really enjoy cricket.
On ABC Radio.
And on Remembrance Day, let's head now to the Hunter Valley, where war veterans, migrants and their families have come together to celebrate two important anniversaries in the small town of Greta. From 1939, it was the site of the country's largest army training camp in World War II. And a decade later, Greta Migrant Camp was the first port of call for thousands of people fleeing war-torn Europe. The Governor General launched the unique 70th and 80th anniversary celebration over the weekend, and Upper Hunter reporter Eliza Getzey was there.
In 1939, the Hunter Valley town of Greta became Australia's largest World War II army training camp. On the weekend, thousands of people poured into the paddocks where there are now ruins of the buildings that once housed soldiers and later migrants.
Hard to imagine it today, but as far as the eye could see, would be buildings and tents.
Governor-General David Hurley opened the celebrations. For organiser and veteran Brett Wild, it's been a labour of love.
It's very important to remember the World War II veterans. There's only about 13,000 of those guys left nationally. What we're about doing today is obviously to honour the 60,000 men of the 6th Division who trained under Thomas Blamey, and he was responsible to raise the 6th Division as Australian government's contribution to the outbreak of World War II. But then on the backside, you've got the migrant story of 100,000 migrants who took a leap of faith to come halfway around the world to start a new life.
In 1949, the army camp was handed to the Department of Immigration, and in that decade it became home to 100,000 migrants fleeing war-torn Europe. Tanya Pertot was one of them, arriving as a little girl from Italy in 1956.
It's to commemorate my family's time that we spent here in Greta. It was like a little Europe, I suppose, so it was all different families. There were Polish, Dutch, Ukrainian, Macedonian, Italian, Greeks.
On the same ship from Trieste was Serena Clapham.
You know, the heartstrings, you know, think of what Mum and Dad went through, especially because I was only six, so, yeah, it must have been really hard. I remember Mama saying she didn't know where we'd come to the ends of the earth because we come from Trieste, which is a city. Coming out here was so different.
So you had to put up with some pretty rough things before you hopefully eventually built a good life here.
Yes, in Edgeworth. It was, in a little garage with everyone else. Tanya was our immediate neighbour. And everyone there, you know, they were all in the same situation as we were.
So the two of you travelled around the same time from Trieste?
In the same ship, yep. Yeah, we're neighbours since 57, I think.
And you've stayed friends all that time?
63 years. It's lovely, you know, to speak about old times.
The celebrations ranged from military displays with guns and tanks to traditional dances and costumes, with a parade uniting the two to celebrate the area's unique recent history.
The men who trained here fought for freedom, for democracy, for the security of our nation. And one of the dividends of their work and their sacrifice was that we were able to create a new Australia and provide opportunity for people who had suffered under oppression during the war, primarily from Europe. I thank all of you for your contribution, both in uniform and as new people to Australia, your families, for building this country and making it what it is today.
connected to my parents, to my past, to my origins, to where it all started in Australia for my parents and me.
Eliza Getzey with that story. And that's all from the Australia-wide team for today. If you want to stay up to date on the bushfire situation in New South Wales and in other areas, please listen to the ABC Local Radio and follow ABC News for the latest. I hope you have a good evening. Cheerio.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.